When Fitzgerald William hobbles into a room, he's the most popular one around. Eyes light up and people smile. Fitzgerald is a basset hound, a therapy dog. Along with his owner, Molly Johnson, he travels around Wisconsin and elsewhere, bringing comfort to others, whether that's cancer patients in a hospital or homesick college students at a university. Science has shown that being around dogs can decrease stress and increase feel-good hormones like serotonin and oxytocin. Therapy animals like Fitzgerald William are trained to have a calm, comforting demeanor. They've been used in medical settings for more than 150 years. Studies have suggested that petting a dog can reduce blood pressure and animals can act as therapists. And today in our studio, Molly is joining us along with Fitzgerald, who's comfortably on the floor and is as sweet as can be, to talk about the benefits of therapy dogs, as well as their experiences traveling together all over the state and beyond. Molly has been doing this work for a long time. Molly Johnson has 25 years of experience working with registered therapy dogs as an owner, handler, mentor, and positive reinforcement trainer. She graduated with a degree from UW-Milwaukee and then completed some years later 6 months of intensive work and graduated with honors to become a certified training partner from the Karen Pryor Academy. Her career has been spent in the nonprofit sector, and she and Fitzgerald William, actually she has three therapy dogs. Fitzgerald William is on our Facebook page. Oh, look at him. He's just so adorable. I gotta stop doing the radio and just playing with the dog. He's on her lap. Oh, honey, you're adorable. He's a basset hound, and he's on our Facebook page, which is the Kathleen Dunn Show. She has three therapy dogs. Madigan, who's a 10-year-old black lab. Fitzgerald William, a 4-year-old, cute as could be, basset hound. Murphy James, a 1-year-old basset hound. And those are dogs number 9, 10, and 11. Other dogs include, you'll get the theme here, Calvin Coolidge, Eleanor Roosevelt, Lyndon Johnson, Dudley, and Beamish. They had political themes going, but now they are doing more of the Irish names, which is what I'm doing. So part of the reason for this is I know that many of you do therapy work or you're interested in, because when I announced that I was retiring, I was going to get a puppy to train to be a therapy dog, which I hope he'll be able to do that. And so all of a sudden I heard from so many people who are doing therapy work with dogs. So Finn arrives next week, and this is my second to the last broadcast, so we're going to learn all about therapy dogs. And welcome phone calls. 800-486-8655 is the number, 800-486-8655. Molly, you will be my inspiration. You have done amazing work for a number of years, and what a beauty you brought in with us. He must be one of the best therapy dogs you ever had. He is really gentle.
He's fantastic. You know, it's difficult. You have one really great therapy dog and you say, I'll never have one like that again. But you do, and they are great, but they're all great in very different ways. You know, Fitzgerald has really become he's exceeded my expectations. And I like to say that I will take a little bit of credit for some of that. You know, therapy dogs, it's not always about training. You know, having a dog who will sit and stay and leave it, are those helpful? Yes, sometimes yes. But what we really want a dog is one who inherently finds joy in visiting with others. Mm-hmm. That's the ethical component to therapy dog work that's often missing. People think that if they have a dog that's comfortable with people coming to their house, or a dog who's comfortable, you know, greeting people in new environments, is that all it takes? Now, we want to see really inherent joy. And that's a rare, I think that in and of itself is a pretty rare component to a lot of dogs.
So how do you know a dog has that? Does it take a while to see it?
You know, I would say that genetics play a huge part in how a dog will behave. You know, honestly, a dog is really made up of, you think of three components. It's genetics, it's learning, and it's environment and experiences. And we don't have control over genetics. If I go to a breeder, and I do want to qualify that the vast majority of the dogs that we've owned have been rescue or shelter dogs. Fitz and Murphy have come from a very, very reputable basset breeder who we trust and who selected both of these dogs primarily because she thought they would be very suitable. Mm-hmm. So can we see it? We can see maybe the parents and see dog mom and dog dad and get a pretty good idea temperament-wise what, you know, what we might be looking at. But what is so crucial is socialization.
Mm-hmm.
And socialization doesn't mean just exposing the dog to a new environment or to new people. You know, it's no more than I'm going to learn to swim by jumping in the deep end. That's not how that works. What it is it's pairing something new with something positive. And that something positive is usually something really stinky and delicious. Liver sausage or cheese. You know, I always joke that I look good at 6 in the morning and it's downhill from there, because by the middle of the day, I've got treats under my fingernails. I've got slobber all over my pants. But you know what? I'm probably the happiest, messiest person out there. So, you know, we spend a lot of time doing socialization from the time their puppy's on. Do we have to get a dog as a puppy for them to be an effective therapy dog? Heavens no. You know, we can get a dog that's 3 or 6 or 10 from a shelter, and they make fantastic therapy dogs. So really what it is do they inherently love people more than life itself? And are they willing to remain calm and relatively stress-free in new environments?
Mm-hmm. And when you talk about socialization, what do you mean?
So I'll give you an example. When Fitz was a puppy, we lived in Neenah. So I would take him downtown, and we would just sit on a park bench.
Really?
Well, okay, I sat on the park bench. He was too little. He sat on the ground. And if I saw somebody that looked different, a beard, glasses, a hat, oh, he's carrying a briefcase, I would ask the person, do you like dogs? Yes, I do. Great. So if Fitzgerald chose to approach that person, then I would treat him while he's approaching.
Oh, interesting.
So he's making the choice. I'm not giving the person a treat saying, could you give my dog a treat? Because if he finds something about that person fearful, whether it's the glasses or the hat, his fear, that treat is not going to overcome that fear.
Mm-hmm.
So instead, we're going to allow him to make choices. So with Murphy, we now live in Oconomowoc, and so with Murphy, I would go to the Piggly Wiggly and I would sit outside and just have him watch the shopping carts, and I would just be giving him treats.
Fascinating. Ah.
So it's, hey, when that shopping cart, that noisy, strange-looking thing with wheels is near, something good happens. Therefore, when I see that cart, I don't have anything to be concerned about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, Kathleen, God forbid, if one of us were hit by a school bus and we sustained injuries, every time we would see a school bus, what kind of reaction would we have? It would be negative.
Mm-hmm.
But if every time a school bus came by, somebody gave me a chocolate bar, I would be looking up and down the street for those school buses. So that's what we're talking, socialization around new people, new environments, new surfaces, new sounds. There's a fairly large component to that socialization process. And honestly, it doesn't end.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't end.
Mm-hmm. And you got into this why? Because you've really done such incredibly extensive work with so many dogs. Why?
As I'm looking out of the window up into the sky, wondering that myself, you know, I really just enjoyed older adults. And I enjoyed animals, and therapy work just was the best of both worlds for me.
Mm-hmm.
It took me a little bit, especially in the beginning, to find the right dog, to do the right kind of work. But this year marks 25 years. It's a big year for us for therapy dog work. And I believe that this is just what I'm supposed to be doing. And I think my mission, I think why I'm here is to help others do the same kind of work.
Hmm.
I do.
No, I'm glad you're here, because you're going to help me do this kind of
yes.
work in this moment as well. And the field, really, we've learned so much. You've learned, I'm sure, so much about what animals, what dogs can do for human beings at very stressful, important times of life. We've learned a lot about that in the last 10 years, haven't we?
We have. We have. Research just continues to evolve. It gets more complex. You know, one of the newer studies, and maybe when I say newer, I would say within the last couple years, one of the studies that's come out has been focused on the ethics of therapy dog visiting, and is this really good for the dog? Because as much as we would like to say the dog enjoys it, are we being subjective, or are we really being objective and looking at their behavior and what they're trying to let us know? So the study that I'm alluding to is they did a blood draw on dogs before and after to determine if the levels of prolactin went up, And wouldn't you know, it was good for the dog and it was good for the person. So they saw a change in those really important feel-good hormones in the dogs. They knew that it was already happening in people. But the study shows it happens in dogs too. Mm-hmm. Now, I have to believe, I guess I'd like to delve into that a little bit more and find out these dogs and who they were visiting and what the circumstances were, because not every visit is smiles and sunshine and unicorns.
Of course not.
Never. I mean, we, over the 25 years we've been doing this, we've had confused people kick our dogs and hit them. We've had dogs run over by wheelchairs. Now I sound like a really completely inept handler, right?
But no, you sound honest.
It happens. Right. And things happen just like that. You cannot predict it. You cannot control the environment. And the best thing you can do is constantly, as a handler, scan the environment. It's like driving. Looking for hazards, looking for people that are potentially hazardous, whether they're going to pull tail or ears or those sorts of things. But environmentally, we're always scanning. Always, always. And the minute that you start to get a little lackadaisical, that's when something potentially will happen. So, you know, I look at Fitzgerald, what is he, maybe 10 inches off the ground? So his view is completely different from the view that I've got. He's looking at ankles all day, poor guy, right? So, you know, I have to look at what is he looking at? How is he assimilating to the environment? What does he perceive? That's different from my human perspective.
Right, yeah. So where do you go?
Oh, my gosh. Well, we've been in Oconomowoc now for a year. We took a little detour to Minnesota for a year for a job opportunity that my husband had. And we had some changes in our family here, so that brought us back. I grew up in Milwaukee, went to college here, and so it's good to be back home. So this, since we've been back to Oconomowoc now a year, Fitzgerald does a few visits in Oconomowoc proper, but we lived up in the Fox Valley, as you well know, for 15, 16 years. So we do still travel up there a couple times a week in conjunction with some paid work that I have. But as a volunteer, Fitz goes back to the Theta Care Regional Cancer Center, and he sits with people that are getting chemo. So we have had some really fantastic experiences there. He is still doing some hospice work up in the Fox Valley. And, you know, we're my schedule now, work schedule, has come to the point where I've really got to be careful about what I choose for volunteer activities, because I don't have as much time for fun anymore.
Right.
But it's important I stay active as a volunteer, because that makes me a better teacher and a better mentor for those people that I'm teaching in my paid work.
And in terms of the training, Molly, what do you do? You talked about socialization as a pup. Do you enroll then a pup in a puppy class?
Well, puppy classes are always fantastic for puppies. I mean, socialization with other dogs, being comfortable with other dogs is very, very important. As a therapy dog, they'll encounter not only other dogs, but other animals. Fitz has been around miniature horses, a therapy chicken, rabbits, pretty much every, potbelly pig. So, yes, classes are great for socialization. But really, as a puppy, what we should be looking at is some introduction to clicker training.
Okay.
And we should be looking at being accustomed to things like traveling in the car, going to the vet, exposure to new and different surfaces like bubble wrap, tarp, going through a tunnel, hanging out with new people. When I taught puppy class, we had a series of four classes. It was a Karen Pryor Academy Puppy Start Right school class, and it was divided into four components: health and handling, wheels and children's toys, appearances and costumes, and the fourth one escapes me. What was it? But you can see that it wasn't a class where you bring your dog and they say, okay, your dog is 10 weeks old and we're going to teach him to sit and lay down and stay. From an impulse control standpoint, that's like asking a two-year-old to sit at the table for 2 hours, okay? It's just, it's not in the cards. It's a distracting environment. So we want that class as a puppy to be exposure to, let's start them off on some basic clicker training. We'll do some targeting. We'll do some mat work. But really, it's about playing with the other puppies, exposure to different surfaces. It's like a little kid in kindergarten.
That sounds like fun.
It is.
Did Fitz have a good time there? Fitz, you'd like kindergarten?
Poor Fitz. He was the, when I used to teach classes, he would be the dog, exposure to dogs with long ears. So the poor guy had every puppy on the planet coming and tugging on his ears in this class,
oh,
and he
Fitz.
Just would sit oh. there. We'd give him a break,
honey.
And then he'd come back. But he enjoyed being the big boy in the class and showing those puppies, you know, that he can take it, right?
He sure can take it. And are there certain breeds or mixes of breeds that you can say are likely to make? I mean, you have a basset hound. Usually you think of retrievers and labs.
Right.
When you think of therapy dogs.
It's true. It has everything to do with temperament.
Right.
Do they enjoy being around people?
Right.
What kind of training, and the kind of training we want to see: positive, pain-free, force-free, no aversives. And an example of an aversive would be throwing a can of coins at a dog to keep them quiet while they're barking.
Okay.
What does that do? It instills nothing but fear. Mm-hmm. Does it change the behavior? No, they're going to keep barking.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, breeds of dogs, there are some that are just genetically more prone to therapy dog work, where there are others that genetically, it's just not what they're built to do.
Right.
And that's okay. Mm-hmm. That's okay. But for folks who are interested in therapy dog work and they don't have a dog, that's the most common question I get.
I'm
How
sure
do
it
I
is.
Pick one?
I'm sure it is.
Oh, man. That's a tough one.
Yeah. And then you go through, so we talk about socialization. Then I have heard that you go through another program, Canine Good Citizenship kind of class, before you can even be considered to do therapy work.
So Canine Good Citizen is an American Kennel Club certificate. And it's basically a test of 10. There's 10 parts to the test. And they would include things like sitting politely for petting,
mm-hmm.
Out for a walk. So we want to make sure the dog's comfortable walking with slack in the leash, a sit, a down. There's a recall. Accepting a friendly stranger. So somebody they don't know coming up and petting appropriately. So is that certificate a requirement, a prerequisite? Not necessarily.
Mm.
It's a nice goal for a lot of folks to have, and there are a lot of Canine Good Citizen classes that are taught in this area, and I wouldn't necessarily shy people away from that. What really is where the rubber hits the road is when we start looking at therapy dog testing. And there are a number of different national registries that somebody could test their dog with. The one that Fitz is tested with is called Alliance of Therapy Dogs.
Mm-hmm.
They register about 15,000 dogs a year, and they're based in Wyoming.
Mm.
Just because they're based in Wyoming should not put anybody off, because they have testers like myself scattered all throughout the country. We volunteer, and we will test dogs in our community at no charge.
Mm.
So the testing is, it's really more about, are they comfortable in a medical environment around medical equipment with new people who will often pet inappropriately? It's really a practical exam. Is the dog asked to sit or lay down or stay during any part of that test or those observations? Not for Alliance of Therapy Dogs.
I see.
And I agree with that. You know, is that important at some point during a visit? It can be, yes. Is it so important that it be tested? Not necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
But Canine Good Citizen is a really good start.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then do you go through a whole training process so you learn about medical equipment, so you learn about maybe you're working in a classroom of children who are autistic or people who are in hospice? You learn about different environments.
Well, yes. When we lived up in the Fox Valley, I used to teach a therapy dog workshop, and it was the bulk of it was exposing dogs to medical equipment, which surprisingly most dogs really are fine with. If they've seen a bicycle or a skateboard, those have wheels. That's the common denominator. I would say that it's a lot of it is on the job learning in many environments. So if you ended up wanting to be, let's say, a volunteer at a local hospital, they will have their own requirements.
I see.
If you were to go to a, I don't know, I'm just going to just, I see the YMCA down the block, so I'll just use them as an example. If they had a reading program for kids, what are their requirements?
I see.
So every entity, whether it be medical organization or community organization, they will all have their own policies, hopefully,
mm-hmm.
and that'll dictate what the requirements are for the dog health-wise, training for you. But really what it boils down to is, what does the dog want to do? Who are
right.
they great with?
Right,
and also,
exactly.
who do you feel comfortable being with?
So the dog will pick the environment that he's more comfortable with.
And the population.
I see.
Yep. Now, for therapy dog testing, they have to be comfortable with all people in all settings. Now, we can't test every setting, you know, in three observations, but we can get a pretty good flavor for what the dog's comfortable with, concerns that the dog may have. Maybe the dog, we get through an observation or two and we figure out, you know what, the dog doesn't like shiny floors. Ah, okay, so there's a point of retraining. Mm-hmm. So, you know, during that testing process, the person doing the testing also does a little bit of coaching to help you understand, you know, what kind of environment you'd be interested in, what kind of challenges those environments present, and what kind of challenges each population presents.
Right. Oh, you're good at this. You know what you're doing.
Oh, bless you.
Now hold on to you for a while. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. We're talking about therapy dogs, and with the trainer and owner and handler, she's had many therapy dogs, and she's brought one in the studio, Fitzgerald William, a Basset Hound, who is sweet as can be, and his picture is on our Facebook page. He is calm and polite and tolerant, loves people of all ages, and is comfortable around other dogs. And we should say, well, I forgot to give his resume here, was featured on the front page of the October 21st, 2015 issue of the Wall Street Journal. Molly Johnson, how about you were sleeping during that, bud? You got to wake up. I was praising you. Joining us is Molly Johnson, 25 years of experience working with registered therapy dogs as an owner, handler, mentor, and positive reinforcement trainer. 800-486-8655 is the number. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network. All right, we have a lot of phone calls coming in, and let's start with Ron. And hi, Ron.
Hi, Kathleen. Congratulations on your retirement.
Thank you very much, Ron.
Yes, and first of all, I wanted to thank you for inspiring me and my late dog, Jack, in becoming a therapy dog team.
Oh.
Yeah, at that time, it was about... I think it was Therapy Dogs Incorporated at that time. Now it's ATD, and that's who we got registered through.
Uh-huh.
And I really appreciated your guests, all the comments. Everything is spot on. But I'd like to thank you for inspiring me to do that, because after that show, I went to a local certifier for ATD and got Jack certified, and we went to nursing homes and to kids reading programs at the local schools.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very good. We lost him in February.
Oh, I'm sorry.
12 going on 13. But I think you're going to find, Kathleen, that you've had a very successful career in radio, but I think you're going to find this therapy dog work just as rewarding, if not more.
I think you're right. I'm sure it's going to be challenging, Ron. Will you do it again?
Yes, we're still kind of mourning that loss, but we've actually started talking about getting a dog, and we definitely will go through that therapy dog program, because I could tell you I could be busy every day for years and years because there's such a need out there. So I hope that this show and others inspires others to get their dogs trained, because there is a need out there. There really is.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you, Ron. I'm so glad you were inspired by the show, and thanks for the good work. And I'm glad you're going to continue with it, because those who love dogs and can do that kind of work, as long as you're able, go to it, right?
Yeah, exactly right. And you're going to enjoy it as well. You're going to be a natural.
I hope so. I hope Finn is.
Right.
Finn's coming next Tuesday. I can't believe it. It's pretty exciting. Thanks, Ron, very much. And there is a growing, you could be busy. I'm sure you've got a lot of other things to do, but you could be busy every day as well. There's a need. I've heard from people doing therapy work that you can work a lot with your dog.
You sure can. And this is a great segue to an important point is, again, I keep circling back to ethics, is how many times out in a week and for what length is appropriate.
Yes.
Every dog is a little bit different, but it is absolutely possible for somebody to do too much, too often, for too long, and burn their dog out.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
it's important. I mean, our household is a little bit different. So when I volunteer, we've got three registered therapy dogs. So I would probably, if I had enough time, I might go out 3 or 4 times a week because I can bring each dog once and maybe one of them could go out twice depending on what that environment and what that population that we're serving is.
Right.
But it's important. You've got to keep those visits to a length that's appropriate for the dog and the amount of times in a week that's appropriate. And that varies by, it's completely different for every single dog.
And how will you know when enough is enough?
Oh, they let you know. And
really?
This is where the point of education, this is where I think we as a trainer now, I'm going to talk as a trainer, not necessarily as a volunteer, but as a professional trainer, that's one thing that I really try to instill in folks is the importance of recognizing when your dog is stressed. Low-level stress looks like licking lips, not you, this is the dog, by the way, licking lips, yawning, shaking like they're wet, shaking like they're freezing cold.
Mm.
People will look at the dog yawning and say, oh my gosh, he's tired. But he's yawning in the middle of the day. Dogs don't usually, your dog may not be sleeping during the day, licking lips. Those are all low-level stress signs. If we choose to ignore those, the dog will typically then either move to another, I guess you could say, a stronger set of signals. And what that might look like is sniffing the ground excessively, excessive self-grooming. Those are classified as displacement signals, meaning this is just too much for me to take in. I'm going to busy myself with something else. If those go ignored, it actually becomes a liability issue. The dog can actually stop signaling altogether, which makes their future behavior unpredictable.
Mm.
And if I had a nickel for every person that said, oh, my dog would never bite, all I have to do is lift up the dog's jowls and say, this dog's got teeth. He can bite anytime he feels he needs to, or if he doesn't have any other choice. So could Fitzgerald lash out and bite somebody? Absolutely. But I would never, ever, as a handler, put him in a situation where he felt that that was his only option.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're asking our dogs to be in an environment that they have zero control over. And we're their advocate. We have to have eyes on them all the time.
Right.
It's tough.
So where did you learn all about this behavior? Did you read about it?
Well, when I went back to school, going to Karen Pryor Academy, that was a huge part of it. Also, tons and tons of books, but it's very important that if you choose to read books or watch television shows, that you choose ones that are rooted in positive reinforcement training. And I hope there's a couple of fellow trainers listening. From our Force Free Trainers of Wisconsin group, we know that there is a particular show on television that is not suitable for anybody who has a dog to be watching because the methods that are used are outdated. They're not based in science, and they're bad for the positive training.
You don't want to say what it is?
Well, can I?
You go ahead.
Okay,
sure.
The Dog Whisperer.
Okay.
The Monks of New Skete. I would encourage anybody, I will buy those books. You email me and I'll buy those books from you. I go to Goodwill, I go to St. Vincent de Paul, and I will pull those books off the shelf.
Do you really?
And take them home and throw them out.
Wow.
Sorry to my husband, Sean. We're spending a little bit of money that way. But, you know, those methods are not training. That is control. It is sheer control, and it's not based on science. I would challenge anybody to present me with a scientific article, one that's based on sound research, that shows that you have to be the alpha. There is no such thing. It does not exist. Where that came from was in wolf packs. Is there an alpha? Is there a dominant dog? Yes. Somehow somebody took that and twisted it around and said, oh, well, between a human and a dog, that also applies.
Mm-hmm.
It does not. We are different species. I could do a whole hour just talking about that. So I'm not going to harp on that too long. But it's really important that the training that you do with your household dog, with a dog that will become a therapy dog, a dog that may even do assistance dog work where they're actually helping one person, that we want to build trust and we want to build this loving human-animal bond.
Mm-hmm.
That is absolutely crucial. I don't know one person that I've run into that said, I don't really care about my relationship with my dog, or, I don't really love him. He's just sort of an accessory. Nobody says that.
Right.
And if we want that loving, trusting bond that's based on mutual respect, positive reinforcement training is the only way to go.
I like your philosophy.
Thank you.
Let's go to Kate in Elkhorn. Hi, Kate.
Oh, hi. Hey,
hi.
First and foremost, hooray for you, and I'm sure you're going to have a wonderful retirement.
Thanks, Kate. Looking forward to it.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I have two topics here for you. First of all, my whole name is Kate Fitzgerald, and my father's name is William Fitzgerald. My brother is William Fitzgerald, and my nephew is William Fitzgerald. So at some point, I'd love to know how your dog got Fitzgerald, William. That's his name. That's wonderful.
Well, Fitzgerald William came about. It was a family decision. So when we knew Fitz was coming to join our family, our kids who are now in college, when they were at home, everybody wrote suggestions on what the dog should be named up on the dry erase board. And then it was a family meeting.
I just love it. Well, it sounds like, you know, a very formal thing, like you're putting his name down on a form or something like that. That's charming. I am a former children's librarian, and we had a very successful program called Read to Rover, or Pause for Reading. And we had therapy dogs come in, and the children read aloud to the dog. It was one-on-one, well, actually, the dog and handler, and then the child, and very, very popular. And we have a large children's area so that we could have, like, three different areas for the dogs. And we had a bulldog, a full-size bulldog that was probably the most popular. But we had every kind of breed you can imagine that was involved in this program. And I had parents who came up to me and would say, my child really hasn't been interested in reading. And I told them that we were going to come and he could read to a dog. And he just is so excited about reading now. So it was a great success.
Mm. That is fantastic. There's a lot of research to support inclusion of therapy dogs in reading programs. Kids are more comfortable. They're not quite as anxious. The handler should be instructed to not do any correction, to just encourage the flow of the story. So if there's a missed word or a missed sentence or a mispronounced word, they just keep on reading. And it's pretty phenomenal. We used to, when I lived up in the Fox Valley, we ran a number of reading programs, and we heard many of the same comments. People would always say, dogs in the library, what is that?
Right.
Oh, you got to come watch.
We've discovered all these things that dogs can do. It's just terrific.
That's the truth.
Thank you, Kate.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Our number is 800-486-8655. Gail in Fish Creek. Hi.
Oh, hi. Oh, and all the best to you, Kathleen.
Thanks,
we're
Gail.
All going to miss you.
Thank you.
I work professionally with animals, and I have worked psychically with animals my whole life. And the last 25, I've been doing it professionally. And what I have found in all the animals I've worked with, that when I spot a dog that would be perfect as a therapy dog, and the owners may not even be aware of it, I will share that because there's a certain essence about the animal that has grown. And I've watched this profession of start coming out of nowhere, so to speak, where it's formed into what it is now. But letting these animals do this emoting that they're able to do and surround them to be able to be around people and help in that way is really phenomenal. But there's an essence about some of them that take them far beyond an owner wanting to do something like help with and have a dog do it, and the dog actually being a natural at it. And when that happens, there's an emoting that takes place that these animals are able to do for people. And as your guest is saying, giving them only so much time out there doing the work, because they have to have cleanse time. They have to have energy time where they get to burn it off. Otherwise, they'll collect too much of it, and they'll be very uncomfortable, and that's when you start seeing that bad behavior.
Mm, thank you very much, Gail, for your call. Appreciate it. And let us go to Cindy in La Crosse next. Hi, Cindy.
Hi there.
Hi.
I have had therapy dogs. We just started our 17th year in May.
Ooh, wonderful.
And
how
I have
you?
Three out of my four dogs are therapy dogs.
Oh.
One is not, and he never will be. But he is my therapy.
So why do you say he isn't? He never would be.
Well, he came from a bad background,
uh-huh.
And he's had a lot to overcome from that. And he is just not comfortable in situations that therapy dogs are in. He actually went through all the classes. He passed the canine good citizen test, and we realized that he just would not make a good therapy dog.
And that is, you bring up a great point. I think people recognizing when their dog isn't suitable, kudos to anybody who does that, because that, you know, we have to say we're going to love our dog unconditionally, whether they become a therapy dog, whether they are a dog in our house, whether they become whatever it is they're destined to become. But honestly, recognizing that and acknowledging that independently without having somebody like me have to maybe help you around to that point, bravo. That's so important.
But I would not have realized that had I not had four therapy dogs before him.
And you know
I would have thought, because you know he did so well in the classes, that that was all it took. And it really doesn't. And we actually belong to a program through our Cooley Region Humane Society. And we have a director and a trainer that is absolutely remarkable. And she really, really helps people find where they fit.
Perfect. That's important.
Yes, it is. So what kind of work do you do with your therapy dog, Cindy?
Oh, my gosh. Because we've been a part of the program for so long, we've probably touched on everything from nursing homes to assisted living to we've actually participated in Reach Rover. And that's really what my dogs do best at. My dogs are now 12, 13, and 14, therapy dogs.
Mm.
And so as they age, their likes have changed a little bit. One of mine pretty much sticks with just the Reach Rover. Otherwise, I have one that is so flexible that she can do just about anything. I have one who is a Westie who is quite mischievous. She needs something that is a little more exciting. She doesn't really want to visit like where she's just going to lay on a bed or, you know, things like that. But I'm so lucky. This is the best thing I've ever done in my whole life.
Oh, yay. Fantastic.
Oh, and I'm so excited for you, Kathleen, to be able to, you know, delve into this area.
Thank you.
Because it is, I have learned life lessons from my dogs with pet therapy.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure you have. I'm sure it's a pretty profound thing, actually.
It is.
Actually, it is.
Yeah.
I have not ever done anything in my life that has had more meaning.
Oh, Cindy, I'm glad you called. Thank you. Thanks.
And I'm thrilled that you're doing a show on it. One of our local hospitals focused on pet therapy. They did a whole, they did commercials. They did billboards on focusing on pet therapy. They have had pet therapy in their hospital for 20 years.
Oh, my goodness.
Fantastic.
That's wonderful.
And when I talk about pet therapy, you can probably tell I get really excited about it. But when I talk about going into the hospital, I tell people we are in more areas of the hospital than we aren't. It's easier for me to tell you what areas we aren't in the hospital.
Mm-hmm. And thank you so much, Cindy, for your call. Let's talk about this, the gradual acceptance of places where you normally wouldn't think you'd be taking dogs that now are welcoming them. I'm sure that that's opened up a lot for you over the time you've done this work.
It has. Our dogs have done funeral home work, which has been really extraordinary. Mm-hmm. Beamish, our golden retriever,
you
who
talked
died
about
last
that
year,
with me. Yes. Oh.
She did some really extraordinary work there for about 5 years when we lived up in the Fox Valley.
Mm-hmm.
Hospice, very, very profound. Again, a medical setting. Some of those visits are in patient private homes. Some are in skilled nursing or assisted living, wherever the person defines as home. Some of the other more unusual places, particularly colleges, are really starting to accept formal therapy dog programs. When we lived in Minnesota, we were part of the University of Minnesota Twin Cities program. Part of the reason that we participated was, well, it was a very well-developed professional program, but the other part was to keep an eye on our younger daughter, who was a freshman.
I like
so
that.
So I got to jump on
That's
campus
excellent.
And see her. But there are so many more unusual places that you're seeing therapy dogs, which has now led to another problem. The problem that has happened is that therapy dogs are now because they're out so much in the community and they're doing so much great work, there's a huge misunderstanding in the general public about the difference between a therapy dog and an emotional support dog and a service
yes.
dog and an assistance dog.
Right.
There's a huge amount of confusion. And if I could take the rest of my life to just focus on teaching people the difference and when dogs can, when people with their dogs are allowed public access in the grocery store or the post office, there are people that are purposely misrepresenting their dog and taking their dog everywhere. And that makes it infinitely more difficult for somebody with a legitimate need for that service animal.
Right.
It makes it infinitely difficult for them to gain access mm-hmm. without being questioned. It happens. I fly very frequently. Usually spring and fall are my very busy times. And I'm usually flying twice, sometimes three times a month. And I will tell you, at least once a month, I see somebody with a dog who's classified as something that clearly they are not. And it's very evident. It's tough. I was at Summerfest this year, and I spotted somebody with a dog that was... that should not have been there.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me is one of the biggest, it's an ethical
right,
problem.
Right,
I mean,
sure
you just shouldn't be misrepresenting your dog as something they're not. Now you look at Fitz and he's wearing a vest and he's
yes.
got his little ID. Now, could I march down the street and go shopping at Grand Avenue or, you know, go to the Y and march in like I belong there? Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Would they ask questions? Probably not.
Mm-hmm.
Because honestly, in the media, you read it on Facebook, you read it everywhere about people that are denied access when they have a legitimate need for the dog.
Mm-hmm.
And so now people are afraid to ask. So could I march around with him and pretend like he's my service dog? Sure. Is it the right thing to do? You and I both know absolutely
right.
not.
Right.
And anybody who misrepresents their dog, that can spell a huge amount of trouble.
Yeah, I would thinking. Yeah. You could be, yeah, a lot
yep.
of trouble.
Yep.
Well, let's pause for just a moment. Cindy, thank you so much for your call. We have one line open if you'd like to join the conversation. We're talking about therapy dogs this hour of the program. Part of it is because I know there are a lot of dog lovers in the audience and people who are interested in this work. We've done, over my 24 years here, quite a few shows on therapy dogs, and now that's what I'm going to do when I stop radio, which is going to be tomorrow. My puppy arrives next week. Ooh-wee. So we have with us Molly Johnson, who has 25 years of experience working with registered therapy dogs. She is an owner, a handler, a mentor, a positive reinforcement trainer. She has three therapy dogs, Madigan, a 10-year-old black lab, Fitzgerald William, a 4-year-old Basset. He's so cute. 4-year-old Basset Hound who's with us in our studio. Murphy James, a 1-year-old Basset Hound. And they are dogs number 9, 10, and 11 for Molly and her family. More phone calls momentarily. This is the Ideas Network. Let's go to Ann in Waukesha next. Hi, Ann.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure, Ann.
Congratulations on your retirement.
Thanks, Ann.
I'm a teacher, and I'm looking in a couple years of retiring, and what you're going to be doing with your dog is what I'm hoping to be doing with my dog.
Good for you. We'll have to meet up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So my question is there a place where you can take your dog where they can be evaluated to see if they have that special something that they need in order to be a therapy dog? And also, is there a mentoring program? We have a Murphy, and he is a rescue that we received. And he's been through obedience training. And I'm looking to do the Canine Companion in the next year. And I became very well aware of the fact that when we went to training, he had lots of good manners, and it was me that needed to be trained. So
I know
I'm
the feeling. I'm with you.
I'm looking for mentoring for me so
yes.
that I can read his signals and
yes.
know, you know, what's best for him.
Excellent, excellent question.
You know, the answer would be call me. Or shoot me an email.
Oh.
I do a lot of things at no cost.
Sorry
to
Molly.
My husband, Sean.
Okay, let's get her email, huh?
Right.
But certainly feel free to give me a ring or shoot me an email. You could also go to my website and just, you know, email me through the contact us page. But I'd be more than happy to meet with you, check out your dog, address your questions and concerns, and then we can together decide what's the best move moving forward.
Oh, it's very kind of you.
Oh, my goodness. That would be wonderful.
Right,
thank
so the
you
website,
so much.
Wait.
Sure. Website is Canine Comfort, and it's spelled out C-A-N-I-N-E, Comfort, C-O-M as in Mary, F as in Frank, O-R-T. And I'm a .U-S as in United States, but I do not work for the government.
Okay.
You were for everybody else.
But pardon me, but by all means, you can shoot me an email through my website. I'd be
wonderful.
Happy to help.
Thank you so much, and thank you for the work you do. Being a teacher, I think to myself, I teach in middle school, if every middle school could have a therapy dog,
would
we work through a lot of issues.
I'm sure you do.
You know, it's Mutual Admiration Society, because you being a teacher in the middle school, that has got to be one of the most difficult jobs out there. So kudos to you.
Yeah, it's one of the hardest grades to teach. It was hard to be a middle schooler, and it's hard to have children in middle school.
Yeah, I remember how hard it was, and it's not any easier being a teacher either.
No, I'm sure it's not.
So,
bless you for what you do. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. That's very kind of you to help her out.
Of course.
Yeah, it's nice.
Happy to do it.
Daniel sends an email. What's the best protocol for children who are seeing a service dog in public?
Protocol for seeing, if Daniel's referring to service dog.
Right.
Service dog is no touchy.
Yep.
The general rule of thumb is, as parents, we should be teaching our children, always ask permission. Because even though the dog is out on the sidewalk with a leash on with a handler, doesn't mean that they're great with all populations. Mm-hmm. So broad rule of thumb is ask permission.
Okay.
You know, my joke always when Fitzgerald, when I get that question, can we pet him? My answer is absolutely. He would be offended if you didn't. Mm. So, because he would.
Yeah, he loves it. He's a good one. Susie in Toma, hi.
Well, first of all, Kathleen, I'm really going to miss you. I was thinking the other day that I kind of grew up with you on the radio. I don't know what I'm going to do without hearing your voice. I mean,
yeah.
I'm happy that you're retiring, but maybe you'll come back and visit us once in a while. I wanted to say that my dog, my puppy, is 9 months old today, and we have been in the Canine Good Citizen Star Puppy program since he was 6 months old. And I agree with what the lady just before me said, that, you know, I'm in training as much as the dog, and it's just quite an experience. It's not easy. I will tell you, it's not easy for either one of us, but it's very rewarding. Right now, we're working on social skills. We have a kind of a month break in our classes, so we're working on social skills, and it's very rewarding, and it's good for me, and it's good for my dog too. So.
And why is it not easy?
Well, first of all, we had to learn each other. You know, I had to learn the tone of my voice. I'm also doing not just verbal instructions with him, but hand signals. So we had to get things straight. You know, I might say something, and I think, well, that's not the command I'm supposed to give him or I want to give him. So we're learning together. You'll learn. You'll know exactly what I'm talking about in a couple of months.
Right.
But it's very rewarding, and go for it, and just. Look for the rainbow, I guess.
Molly.
There is definitely, depending on the population that we're working with, there's an emotional burden for us as humans. You know, I can't visit a patient who's receiving hospice care and they have limited amount of time left in their life and do that in a vacuum and pretend that it doesn't affect me.
Of course.
So with every population, there is a little bit of a burden, and that's not a negative, but it's just something that any therapy dog handler needs to be aware of.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just about the dog. You're holding the other end of the leash, and remember, you drove your dog there too.
Right.
We're going to work on that for Fitz. He's going to drive himself. But
hey, Fitz, you want to do that?
He would fall asleep at the wheel.
You cutie. Molly, you're great. I'm
so glad
that I had a chance to talk to you before we say goodbye. Thank you so much for all of your information.
I was listening to your interview with Bob Uecker on the way in, and honestly, when you were saying that you've chosen guests and you've picked shows this week, things that are close to your heart, oh my gosh, I almost started to cry in the car because I thought, how honored are we that we're part of that? So
thank you
so much.
Yeah, I'm the one who's honored. Thank you, Molly Johnson and Fitzgerald William. Thanks so much to Gretchen Brown and Colleen Leahy for being excited about having this doggy in the studio. They're as happy as I am to have him here. And thanks so much to Molly and all the work that she's doing. We'll be with you again tomorrow. It'll be my last day in radio. Hard to believe after 44 years. Woo! I got to get a puppy. Start being a therapy dog mom. News is next.